Well, good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. I see a lot of anxious faces in this room. I think it's going to be an exciting session, so thanks for being here. My name's Allison Young. I am a board member of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. I am also part of a sponsoring organization. I am the managing director for leadership and civic engagement at Drexel University's LeBeau College of Business. There won't be a quiz on that. I realize it's a long academic title, but I'm proud to be your host for this session. And as a leading educational institution here in Philadelphia, it's my pleasure to welcome you here on behalf of Drexel LeBeau and my fellow board members of the PA Conference for Women. So welcome. Now, more importantly, I am also a wife, a sister, a daughter, and a working mom of a one-year-old. So for all the working moms who made it here this morning, can I get a woohoo? It's an achievement, I know. So the Institute for Strategic Leadership at Drexel LeBeau aims to inform, inspire, and influence leaders who are transforming the world of business, all of you. And that begins with educating ourselves, so I am especially thrilled that you're all here this morning to learn and to network. Drexel LeBeau is proud to be a partner of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women, and together our combined mission is to increase the representation of women in leadership roles, by empowering them to make their mark in and for their companies, their careers, and their communities. This conference today is just one of many exceptional programs that we offer to help women leaders excel, connect, and develop. We encourage you today while you're here to go to the exhibit hall and visit the Drexel LeBeau Career Pavilion for resume review and professional coaching opportunities while you're here. I'm thrilled that you're here to participate in this session called The Objective Leader, and we have an amazing one in store for you. So I'm excited to introduce our speaker to you today. Elizabeth Thornton is an author, speaker, professor of management practice at Babson Executive Education and an adjunct lecturer in entrepreneurship at Babson College. Her first book, The Objective Leader, How to Leverage the Power of Seeing Things as They Are, is based on a curriculum she developed and teaches to graduate students, entrepreneurs, and corporate executives. The Objective Leader is centered on the premise that we are all subjective, and it's human nature. Elizabeth will be signing books this afternoon at 12:30, so I encourage you to visit her there if you have additional questions and want to have your book signed. A couple of housekeeping announcements. Please take a moment to turn off the sound of your cell phones. I will wait. Thank you. Also, we will save time at the end of this presentation for Q&A. We are running about 5 minutes past schedule, so there will be time. We'll continue the session until 11:05. You'll see three microphones in the aisle. When Elizabeth is finished with her presentation, I'd ask you to line up in the microphones and we'll go one by one. There are many, many of you interested in this topic, so please keep your questions short. Notice I said questions, no speeches. So please keep your questions short so we can get to as many as possible. Thank you for being here. Now, without further ado, I'd like you to ask you to join me in welcoming Elizabeth Thornton.
Wow. Am I on? Can you hear me? How's everybody? Really? You guys are great? Good. I'm excited about being here. But you guys are about to get a 7-week course in about 50 minutes. Are you ready? You ready? Okay, so why don't we just jump in, okay? So what I'd like us to take away today, for you guys to take away, is that we are inherently subjective, right? We perceive things incorrectly and we respond incorrectly sometimes, and we can get ourselves in a whole bunch of trouble. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So the next thing I want to talk to you about today is about we think and act through our mental models. We have ways that we frame our world, and that's how we perceive, think, and act. But I want you guys to walk away with something that's actionable, something you can go back, well, you can walk right out the door and start doing right away. So we're going to talk about how can I be more objective under pressure, and how can I rethink the way I think. That's what I want us to cover today. You guys ready? So let's be honest with each other and honest with ourselves. You guys commit to that? I want to see hands. All right, so I got a couple questions I need to ask you. Number one, have you ever overreacted to a situation? Oh, really? Okay. Oh, someone's like, okay, both hands. have you ever taken something personally that really wasn't personal? Isn't that so embarrassing? It's embarrassing. Okay, so here you are, you're sitting at your desk or home computer, wherever, you get this email. And you perceive tone in the email? Okay, and then what do? You respond with tone. How's that work out for you? Maybe not so good. And oftentimes we judge people unfairly. Anyone ever judge people quickly and unfairly? Okay, so this is what we do, but sometimes it can cost a lot. So here's an extreme case of subjectivity, extreme case. And I'm using men as an example. I hope they're not, well, there's going to be men in the room. But just to show that this example applies to everyone, not just us. We are not inherently more subjective than anybody else. So, Jim. Jim's been working with the company about 6 months. He's considered a high potential employee. People love him. They think he's great. And every morning, Jim, I'm going to come down there. So you're going to be my Jim. Scott, I'm Scott. This is Jim. Scott comes in the office and says, "Good morning, Jim." See, and he just loves that. The fact that his boss acknowledges him that way every morning. So then one morning rolls around. Here comes Scott. So now what's Jim thinking? Something's not right. What else? What I do wrong? Right? So, okay, so Jim starts spinning in the mind. Uh-oh, I heard there are going to be layoffs. Oh my God, he didn't say hello to me. He didn't say hello to me because, oh my God, he has to lay me off. He's got to reduce headcount. His boss told him he did, and he didn't look at me today. He didn't say hello because I'm going to get laid off. Oh my God, if I get laid off, my wife's going to leave me. I'm not going to be able to send my kids to school. Oh my God, I can't get laid off. I can't lose my job. So he runs into Scott's office, and he says, "Hi, are there going to be layoffs? Am I on the list?" Scott looks at him like, "What the heck are you talking about?" So what's the one thing that actually happened here? What's the one thing? He didn't say hello. Period, end of story. Everything else he made up in his mind. Now, I know that you would never do anything like this. But do you know someone who could maybe misinterpret things like that? Start spinning in the mind and respond inappropriately? This is what we're talking about. What about this? Plays out personally as well. Patricia and Sam have been dating a while. Sam calls Patricia every morning and says, "Hi, Patricia, have a good day. I love you. They're just so cute. They're just so cute. Precious. They're a match made in heaven." So then one day Sam doesn't call. What's Patricia thinking? "Oh, I saw him cheating on me. I saw him looking at that woman at the restaurant last night. You know what? I think I'm just going to let this go. You know what? I thought he liked me, but maybe he doesn't. So you know what? I'm just going to like let him off the hook. So I'm going to call him up, and I'm going to break up with him before he breaks up with me." So these are extreme cases of subjectivity, but really, let's be honest, how extreme are they? Not so extreme. You can imagine yourself kind of getting carried away with your thoughts and then responding in a way that hurts you, actually. So this is what we do. We perceive through our senses. We have an experience, a person, situation, or an event. And in an instant, we project our fears, our background, our mental models onto whatever that is, and often we just get it wrong. You with me? We just get it wrong. How many of you will admit, right now, being honest, because you guys got about another 45 minutes on the honesty clock, okay? So, being honest, how many of you will admit that sometimes you perceive things incorrectly, and sometimes you respond incorrectly? Okay, so you get the reason why we do this. And the psychologists call these cognitive errors. They've got names for it. You know, filtering. You know, we only look at the positive, the negative aspects, right? And then blow that up out of proportion. Don't even look at the positive. This is what we do. This is our inherent subjectivity. The problem is, and the challenge for us as leaders, is that when the pressure to perform intensifies, how many of you guys feel like you're under a lot more pressure than you used to be? Yeah, it's crazy. It's the work-life balance, it's taking care of your family, it's technology, all these things, right? But when the pressure to perform intensifies, we tend to rely on our past experiences, our old ways of seeing the world, that prevents us from looking at things in an objective or an unbiased manner. You with me? Okay, I'm a professor, I always say that. So are you with me? Good. Okay, so the need for objectivity in leadership is increasing. Managing and balancing parenting and work. Biases still persist. We still have to navigate that. Would you agree with that? As women in the workplace, we are still navigating this. It adds more pressure. It gives us more pressure that we're making, seeing things clearly and making sound judgments and responding appropriately. Is that true? Absolutely. The pace is faster, the expectations are greater. This is why objectivity today is so important. Now, think about it. Is it bothering you that I'm walking? Because I can hear it. Can you guys hear it? It's okay? It's okay? Okay. Oh, nah. I got a stroll in my heels. You know how we are. Okay. So, think about a situation where you were less than objective. Just to yourself. What did it cost you? What was the consequence? Self-respect. Excellent. What else? Working relationships, absolutely. Excuse me, sleep. Absolutely, because how many, we're still honest, how many people spin and spin in their minds at night after they do something that they regret and they beat themselves up? Yes, so sleep, health and well-being. Anything else? Wasted time.
A lot of stress.
Lot of stress. Too much stress. Absolutely, that impacts our health and well-being. So, critical deadlines. Could it cost a critical deadline? Sure. Emerging market opportunities, relationships, internal relationships, reputations, promotional opportunities. You guys got all of them. Does anyone want to guess what it cost me? No one wants to guess? It cost me $1 million. I know. Can you believe it? Really, it cost me $1 million. I had a business venture and I didn't see things very clearly. And at the end of the day, it wasn't the business decisions I was making or not making, but it was how I framed my world, my inability to see things as they were. I kept projecting false mental models and had insecurities and all these things that weren't allowing me to mitigate my risk appropriately. And in fact, because of that experience, I got on this mission now. This is my life's purpose, guys, is to help people not lose $1 million by not being objective, but to learn that this is our inherent subjectivity, but we can learn to increase our objectivity so that we can actually be happier, number one, and more successful. So you want to get into how to do this?
Yeah.
Who says they want to be more objective? All right, so let's get into how. Okay, I have defined objectivity as the ability to see and accept things as they are. And it's all about the response. It's all about the response. Now, right away, you're not going to control the spin of the mind. Remember Jim was going crazy in his mind? We're not talking about, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. You might still do that. But at the end of the day, it's all about the response. He ran into Scott's office. He could have chose a different and more objective response, correct? So when we talk about objectivity, we're talking about our response and responding thoughtfully, deliberately to the changing dynamics. Right? You with me? Okay. So, objectivity's ability to question our mental models because we think and act through our mental models. We're going to talk about mental models in just a second. It's the capacity to identify our ways of thinking and acting that no longer serve us, that actually impede our ability to see things as they are. And lastly, objectivity is the ability to understand other people's points of view. So, let's get into it. To frame this discussion for the next 30 minutes or so, I need you to answer this question. And I know it's a little early to be thinking about something like this, but let's give it a shot. Which is more objective? It is, therefore I see, or I see, therefore it is? Who says it is, therefore I see? Excellent. Okay, some people say I see, therefore it is. Okay, a few people say that. And I agree with most of you. I believe it's it is, therefore I see. That's like objective reality. If the pothole is there, it's objective reality. I might be riding along and have an experience with that pothole. When we talk about increasing our objectivity, we're not talking about affecting objective reality. You with me? But what we are talking about is the I see, therefore it is. And that's all the things that we make up about a situation or a person or whatever it is. Now, I'm going to do this thing on this side this time. So, let me demonstrate the I see, therefore it is. I'm walking by this wonderful woman here, Did you see the way she just looked at me? Did you see? Did you see? Did you see? She must not like me. Now, okay, we're still being honest. How often do we do that? Huh? We do that, and guess what we're doing? We are making up what we think other people think, and then we are trying to adjust our behaviors to accommodate what we think they think. Did you hear me? We are making up what we think people think, and then we are trying to change who we are and how we act based on what we made up about what we think they think. Is this true? Yeah, we're gonna learn how to do that a little bit less. So in the context of objectivity, we're talking about decreasing the I see, therefore it is, all the things that you project on what is. Scott walked by Jim's office and he made up this whole story. Oh, there's gonna be layoffs, I'm gonna lose my wife, I'm gonna lose my family. That's the I see, all the things he projected. So in the context of objectivity, we're gonna reduce that. Okay, so we're gonna get into how to do that now. Everyone say I. Okay. This is so much fun. I am the subject, don't say this part. I am the subject. Everything that I experience, everything that I'm aware of is an object of my awareness and therefore not me. What the heck is she talking about? You are all subjects. I am an object of your awareness, is that true? I am the subject, you are all an object of my awareness. You are the subject, she's an object of your awareness, is that true? Now why do we care about, and I am the subject, everything I experience, everything I'm aware of is an object of my awareness, but therefore not me. You are all subjects. This is an object of your awareness. Do you know that you are not this bottle of water?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. You are the subject, I'm an object of your awareness. Do you know that you're not me?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. Now, why do we care about that in the context of objectivity? What does that mean to you? Anybody have a thought?
It doesn't distort the facts.
It doesn't distort the facts. That's exactly right. Anything else? As the subject, who is driving their response to everything they are aware of and everything they experience? Who? You as the subject. The subject drives their response to everything that they experience. You can't blame it on anybody else. He made me do it. No. As the subject, you determine your response to everything that you experience. Now, this is important, but we're gonna kind of spin it around. So, the brain. Brain has 100 billion nerve cells connected to 10,000 other neurons. It's like the Milky Way galaxy in your head. From the time we are little kids, from every experience that we have all the stimuli coming in. We are interpreting that stimuli, we're naming it, we're defining it, we're saying how we feel about it, we're having an emotional response to it, and we are actually creating our neural structure as we go along. Were you aware of that? All these neurons connected together, it's based on our emotions, our thoughts, and how we are responding to everything that we experience. So when you're doing things automatically, it's because it's hardwired in your neural net. You're inherently subjective because it's hardwired in your neural net. And what's wired together fires together. How's this sounding to you? You guys getting this? Okay, good. So, we're gonna talk about, we perceive through our senses a person, situation, or an event, and in an instant we project our mental models. Now, mental models are deep-rooted ideas about the way the world is and the way things ought to be. We have a mental model for every role we play. We have a mental model for what it is to be a woman in the workplace, do we not? We have a mental model for what it is to be a mother, a wife, a daughter, a sister, a colleague, a leader, a boss. We have a mental model for every single role we play. And the interesting thing is, our mental models become hardwired in our neural net. Remember we were talking about our neural net? Right? Our belief systems, what we believe, how we want to act, how we want to respond to things has become hardwired in our neural net, and it's driving our perception and our response to everything we experience. How are we doing with this, guys? You got to getting a lot of content. We doing okay?
Yes.
Okay, so I needed to validate this in my own experience. So here was an example. 2003, I had a Mitsubishi Galant. It had 168,000 miles on it. I needed a new car, obviously, right? So I called my big brother Hugh. He said, you know what, get this Lincoln LS thing. It's a good car, zero down, zero zeros. I like the zeros. So I went online, I checked out the car, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful in silver exterior. Silver, this is a sweet car. Silver interior, it's just a beautiful car. I actually love this car. I'm like, maybe I could even swing it. With all the zeros, maybe I could even swing it. But I'm not gonna buy the car today. So I go on about my business. I go out food shopping. And then all of a sudden, what do I see? The silver Lincoln, and with the silver interior, is that not true? Now, has that ever happened to anyone? Now, that's the power of mental models. That is the power of mental models. You with me? That's the power of mental models. What we fundamentally believe about ourselves, that's the number one mental model, your self-concept. What you believe is possible in your life, what you believe your purpose is for this life, the role you play with your family, all those beliefs, all those mental models drive your perception and your response and actually drives your experience. Now, how powerful is that? That's how powerful we are because it's hardwired in our neural net. That's why I wanted to show you the neural net. Do you understand? Do you get the connection here, right? Excellent. So, now, I don't know about you, but my mother never said, honey, you're developing mental models, and you know, since you were like 3 or 4, and they're hardwired in your neural net, and from time to time, you need to evaluate whether your mental model. Did your mom tell you that? Did anyone's mom tell them that? Yeah. But here we are with a greater understanding of the brain, and now we understand the power of our mental models. And the key for us to be objective, to be happy and successful, and to realize our fullest potential is to examine our mental models, determine which ones serve us, and if they don't, transform them to a model and belief system that's going to make you happy and successful in this world. Bottom line, that's the key to being objective. You with me? Okay. Societal mental models. Now, we are all impacted by societal mental models, right? Their roles, they have research about whether we should be working full-time or not, or being home taking care of the children. Half the population still believe that women should be caregivers number one, maybe work part-time. Now, we're still being honest. How many of you are influenced by societal mental models? Thank you. We are. We are. Do we have to be? Can we choose to examine it for ourselves and then choose to change it that better suits us? Do we have that power to do that? Yes, we do. Men have mental models too. Did you know that in order to be a real man, they have to fix everything? So, there's a lot of different mental models that go on that I've learned. And, you know, and I've been doing this research for a while. And some of these play out in the workplace. You know, the validation seeker, I need others to like me and think I'm smart. People who are very, very competitive. How about being a perfectionist? Any perfectionist in the room? And these kind of play out positively and negatively. Most perfectionists I've met are very high performing. How many perfectionists in the room are very high performing? Okay, how many of you are driving yourself crazy? How many of you are stressed out? So there are positive and negative aspects of these mental models. If you're a boss, they tend to be micromanagers. They tend to be, are you critical and judgmental of other people and the way they do things as a perfectionist? Sometimes. Then there's one about being a competitor. You want to beat everybody out. You got to be better than everybody. And often organizations are built on this. And they have these siloed organizations. No one shares information because they're all so competitive. Have you guys ever worked with someone who's very competitive? How much fun is that? Yeah, so these are just some ways in which we frame our world, just to give you a couple examples. Control. Any control freaks in the room? Yeah, okay, got a few cans going up. I need to control people, circumstances, events, traffic patterns, weather patterns. I need to control it all. Right? And sometimes control freaks, again, their work product could be good, but they're not really good collaborators, are they? They're not really great bosses. So there's positive and negatives of these mental models. So let me say this about mental models. And I really want you to hear this. You do not have flawed mental models. Say that out loud. I do not have flawed mental models. You don't, because you wouldn't be coming to a conference like that. You wouldn't be holding the jobs that you have if you had flawed mental models. Your mental, 99% of your mental models are probably serving you just fine. But, so don't go home and say, honey, I got flawed mental models. Or don't go home and say to your honey, honey, you got flawed mental models. But understand this. If you find yourself getting in a situation to where you're overreacting a lot, when you are just so stressed out, you can't calm your mind down, you might have a mental model operating that's not serving you. And so we're talking about, in this room, the opportunity to increase our objectivity by identifying and tweaking our mental models so that they serve us better. You with me on this? Okay, good. Okay. I perceive through my senses a person, situation, or an event, and in an instant, I project my number one was mental models. Now we're talking about emotions. Are emotions bad? No. Emotions happen, do they not? And we rarely have any control over when we will be swept by emotion or what the emotion will be. I think emotions are a data point because it's somewhere in our neural net. We had an experience and had an emotional response to it. It's information. The key to being objective is to not respond out of emotion and to be able to create the space where, okay, I'm angry now, I don't want to respond now, I'm going to figure out a way to give myself some time because I am having an emotional response. Don't dismiss it. Don't say, why do I always get this emotional? Why do I get this angry? Think about it, because there's an underlying mental model that you might want to take a look at. It's information, it's data. So a lot of women have a tendency to assume that we are perceived as being too emotional. We have just an intuitive response to something we're experiencing that we just need to figure out what it means. Do you understand? Okay. We perceive through our senses a person, situation, or event, and in an instant we project our, what's the first one we talked about? Come on. Mental models, great. Second one was? Emotions. Okay, now third one is thoughts. Are you your thoughts? Who says I am not my thoughts? Okay, a little bit. Oh, okay, who says I am my thoughts? Okay, who says, yeah, this is way too early in the day for me to be thinking about this? Okay, I got some hands going up. So let's go back to our subject-object logic. Do you remember that? Do you remember what we talked about? I am the subject. Everything I experience, everything I'm aware of is an object of my awareness, but therefore not me. Are you aware of your thoughts? Yes? Who says I'm aware of my thoughts? Otherwise, you're kind of walking around like this, right? So yeah, you're aware of your thoughts. So are you your thoughts? I am the subject. Everything I'm aware of is an object of my awareness and therefore not me. I am aware of my thoughts, so therefore my thoughts are not me. They are part of you. They come from you. But do you get to choose between two thoughts? Here's a thought. Right here. I am a successful woman. I've been given core gifts and skills that I'm going to use and leverage to create great possibilities for my life. That's a thought. Here's another thought. You know, there's too many biases that persist in the world. They're never going to give women a fair shake, so I shouldn't really try that hard. Those are two thoughts. Now, could those two thoughts happen right after each other? Yes. Do I get to choose which thought I want to put my belief system into? Do I want to work on? Do I want to focus on? Do I get to choose?
Yes,
because? Why do I get to choose? Because you're the subject, and you were aware of it. You're aware, once you become aware of your mental models, we all said that we can transform our mental models. Once we're aware of our emotions, we can understand our emotions, and we don't have to respond to them. We are not, and this is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of a wake-up call to me, guys, you know? We are not victims of our minds. Do you hear me? We are not. We get to choose how we're going to respond, but we have to learn how to do it. And if you don't do it, it's not because you're crazy, it's not because you're lazy, it's not because of any of these things. It's because of what's been hardwired in your neural net. What's wired together is fired together, so that's all that's happening. To serve us, that's what's happening in the brain. But now that we are the subject, we understand the capacity of the brain to change, we can change our mind and change our life. And we can learn to be objective by seeing things more clearly. And the lens through which we see the world are mental models that help us see things clearly, that don't skew our ability to see things as they are. So how we doing? How you guys doing? Okay. So let's get into, so basically thoughts are harmless, and you know, and they're only harmless unless you believe in them. But thoughts also reinforce mental models. So if I believe, let's say we're talking about a Pennsylvania Conference for Women. If I believe that there's a glass ceiling for women that will always persist and that I cannot ascend to, let's just say I can't ascend to the SVP, EVP level. And I act, this is my belief system. This is my mental model as a woman. And here I am sitting in my office and I see a job for an EVP position for which I believe I'm uniquely qualified. What will my thoughts tell me? I'm not going to get it. And anything else? Should I even try to apply? Should I even inquire about it? My thoughts will give me scientific data to show me that I should not apply for this job. Because what's wired together fires together. If I believe this, my brain's going to support it. If I want a car, my brain's going to show it to me. If I believe I'm not going to be successful, everything I experience is going to be that lens. Do you see the power of this? How many of you guys think that you can change your mind? Oh, wow. How many of you guys think you can learn to be more objective so you can have a happier, more successful life? Oh my God, the whole room, that's so great. Okay, good. Okay, the thoughts are really powerful. They send electrical signals throughout your brain. Have you ever noticed when you beat yourself up that you start feeling sick? Or you feel really bad? It's because thoughts have physical properties and they release chemicals in your body. And the most important thing I want to share with you is that thoughts lie. They are often incorrect. Did you know that you were lying to yourself all day long? Did you know that? Why do you think that's possible? If our thoughts are supporting our mental models are flawed, then guess what? My thoughts could be lying to me. Instead of my thoughts saying, I can never be successful as a woman at EVP, that's because my mental model says that and my thoughts are supporting it, so that's a lie. Is that not a lie? So how many times are we're actually hearing or have these thoughts that actually are not correct? Often. All right, so we have the power to challenge every negative thought. Because, why? Because we are the subject. And because what? And we are not our thoughts. Wow, you guys have really mastered this so quickly. Okay, so if thought support, remember we said, to how many of you would admit, let's go this place first. How many of you would admit, okay, we're still being honest, that the content of your thoughts is sometimes harsh, negative, judgmental? Who says they admit to that? Yeah. Yeah. So, if our thoughts support our mental models, remember we talked about that? And I wouldn't even think about applying for that job. My brain's telling me don't even think about it. If my thoughts support my beliefs and my mental models, but my thoughts are often harsh, judgmental, and negative, what could a mental model be that negative, harsh, judgmental thoughts support? Did you get it? Did you get what I said? Depression based on what feeling? What belief? Inadequacy? Unworthiness? Anyone else? Pessimism? All of this. And the number one mental model that I think underlies mostly everything else is I'm not good enough. And really, I've been doing this for a while, and everyone raises their hand when I ask them if they have negative and judgmental thoughts. And I believe them. I say, well, you know what? Darn it, I am good enough. I'm going to be a perfectionist and to show everyone that I'm good enough. And then every time I try to be a perfectionist and I stress myself out and I'm actually not perfect in that moment, guess what it does? It reinforces the mental model I'm not good enough. Every time I try to control traffic patterns and weather patterns and I can't do that, it reinforces. So this is a fundamental mental model. And I think it's very prevalent for us as women. I really do, because of this conflict sometimes that we have, that we have a bit of insecurity, right? Now, what kind of impact does not feeling good enough have on your life? It limits you, right? It's a belief system. The first place to start in being objective is to reframe the way you think about yourself. Because isn't that the first place? That's the first belief? Your possibilities and your happiness and success rest on your ability to see yourself, be objective about yourself as you are everything else. So, you're like, yes, she's like, yes. Okay. So, just want you to throw out, what's your mental model about being a leader? What do you have to, in order for me to be successful as a leader, I have to what?
Act like a man.
Oh my God, act like a man. No, I'm saying, oh my God, because I hear that a lot. Sometimes we have that mental model. Is that a positive mental model?
No.
Right, okay, what else?
Be
confident. Huh? Be confident. What else?
Decisive.
Be objective.
Be objective,
okay. Be passionate. Have a vision? Absolutely. Now, you as leaders in this room, I want you to think about, number one, think about what your belief system about yourself, but the primary role you're playing as leaders, think about what your mental model is about your role as a leader, and whether that mental model is serving you. Whether it actually helps you to achieve your goals. Okay. So let's get actionable here. I want to do objectivity under pressure. Let's do that. Okay, so I'm gonna try to wrap this up in about 10 minutes. Okay, how to be more objective in the moment? Do you wanna learn how to do that? Okay, so here's the question. It all rests on your answer to this question. Do you know how you feel right before you lose your mind? I like to say it funny. Do you know? What's it feel like? Huh? Like you're going to lose your line. Do you get, your heart starts beating a little fast? I get butterflies in my stomach. Right. You get what?
Red.
Yeah, you get red. Right, little sweat. I got sweaty palms right now. But I'm not about to lose my mind. Anyway, so the key to being objective in the moment is being aware of your triggers. Because your trigger is saying, uh-oh, I'm about to do something I'm going to regret. And then your job then is to create the space, the distance between your reaction and your response. Understand that. Now, I had a situation where I got an email from this woman who I think wanted my job. I'm in the job for about 3 weeks. She says, Elizabeth, I haven't seen this. I was expecting to see this. I'm very disappointed at this. And I'm like, are you crazy, lady? And she copied my peers and my boss. And I wanted to kill this woman, I'm sorry to say. But I knew, or I was early in my objectivity work, and I knew I could not respond to that email because I was feeling all my buttons got pushed. All my insecurity, my not good enough, all of it got pushed. So I decided I'm going to go home and go for a run. The adrenaline's making me madder, and I'm just constructing this very evil email in my mind. So then I say, okay, my Netflix movie came, so I'm going to watch my movie. Okay, so my TV's over here, my computer's over here. I'm like, and I'm not watching the movie. Finally, I take 2 aspirin, drink a glass of wine, knock myself out. Totally, because I can't drink. And I woke up the next day, and you would have been so proud of me. I wrote this most perfectly crafted, thank you so much for your inquiry. I'm looking forward to working with you and all the other departments. I'm meeting with everyone, having lunch to discuss your priority. And you guys would have been so proud. Still kind of wanted to shoot her, but that's okay. But I responded. It's all about the response. So the question is, what now? I am not advocating drugs and alcohol as the way to do this, okay? So you cannot walk away with that thought. Don't say, Elizabeth said I got to get drunk. No, okay. So it's okay with emails, right? So you either write the email and don't send it, or you knock yourself out, watch a movie, distract yourself or something. You can do that. But when things are happening really fast and my boss here is in my face, what do? I want to punch her out, but I know that I can't do that. So what do? Deep breath is really important. But sometimes it's all, you can't say, well, excuse me, I need to analyze my mental models and see which ones are, I'll get back to you. Can't do that. But what you can do is come up with some questions in your little toolkit, right? and always be able to have these questions ready. Well, you know what? I really want to understand your point of view here. Could you just repeat what you just said? I want to make sure I understand your priorities. I want to make sure I understand. Whatever it is, have that in your toolkit. Because the thing is, what you're trying to do is create the space between the reaction, right, and your response. And you're trying to do the opposite of what your mind is telling you to do. You're reversing your tendency. You with me on this? Reverse your tendency. Your tendency is to write the email back. Don't do it. In Jim and Scott, the tendency was to run into Scott's office to confront him. Sit down. Don't do anything. So, do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Okay, so, and everyone is very individual about how they use the skills for objectivity and how they incorporate it into their lives. Some people can write the email and not send it. Some people say if they write it, I'm going to send it. Some people say I got to put it in a Word document so I'm not tempted to send it. You know, so whatever it is, it has to work for you. Do you with me on that? Okay, so I want to close with mindfulness is the key. To be aware of your triggers, you have to be mindful. To be aware of how you're feeling in that moment. Say, oh, here it comes. Let me create that space so I don't get myself in trouble. So the last thing is the framework for rethinking the way we think. So I told you I lost $1 million, right? So I want to share with you the process that helped me get off the couch. But let me talk about how to transform a mental model. How many of you guys are thinking right now that you have a mental model that you might want to tweak? Who says yes? Okay, excellent. Excellent. So this is how you do it. You write down, clearly articulate the current mental model. With me? Then you think about the behaviors. What does it cause you to do? For example, if I'm a perfectionist, when I'm a perfectionist and I have someone coming into my office, I get angry and irritated because I know they're not going to do. They didn't do it the way I wanted them to do it. So that's my behavior. So when they come in, I judge them, I interrupt them, I belittle them. I'm just not open at all. That's what I do as a result of my mental model about being a perfectionist. So what does it cost? Well, you know, my entire team hates me or is intimidated and doesn't really think creatively because they just try to do it the way I say, and so we're not very creative as an organization. That's the consequence. What does it cost? Think about the positive and negatives. Hey, but I'm a good performer, but on the other side, you know, it cost me this. What are your triggers? Right before you jump down that person's throat or you don't listen or you belittle them, how do you feel? I feel irritated. I feel stressed out in that moment. So then, okay, what's the new mental model? I don't want to be a perfectionist in everything that I will do. As a leader now, I want to be able to delegate and I want to be able to develop my people. Leadership is about not me being perfect, but me developing my talent. So that's my new way of thinking about it. So then I go back to that behavior. So instead of them coming in the door and me jumping down their throat, I'm going to say, come on in. I can't wait to see your approach on this. Walk me through your thought process. And I have that in my toolkit. Because here's the deal, because of the brain's neuroplasticity, every single time you interrupt your automatic response that's hardwired in your neural net, remember we told what's wired together fires together? Every time we interrupt that automatic response and we do something different, we're loosening that connection to the neural net and we're creating a new one. That's why it's important to understand your triggers, because that's the way we transform our mental models. So your job is, if you have a mental model, think about the behaviors, how you feel right before, and what's it costing you? What's another way of thinking about it, and what are you going to do instead? Being aware of your triggers so that you can stop the old behavior and do the new behavior, and over time, you're actually rewiring your neural structure and taking control as the subject of how you respond to people, circumstances, and events. You with me? Okay. The last thing I want to share with you is this. Sometimes to change mental models, you have to have new ways of thinking and acting. Knowledge, a new perspective. And I don't think I need to show this right now. I want to share with you just really quickly, and we'll end on this. I want to share with you. So I've never failed before in my life. I crashed and burned. I lost $1 million. And it was the worst experience of my life. It turned out to be the best, actually, after I went through that. But at the end of the day, I had to rethink the way I felt about myself. Myself, my belief system, my self-concept is that my value and worth was tied to me being successful, making a certain amount of money, having a title. Anyone have a little bit of that going on? About how they feel about themselves? I even believe that people loved me because I was successful, because I made money and I had this great job and all this stuff. That was how I framed my world. But once I lost everything, I mean, I lost everything. House, everything. I had risked too much. So here I am trying to find change in the cushion of the sofa, because I am totally broke. I had to start rethinking the way I think about myself. And I started with thinking about the world. And I was like, wow, this is an interesting kind of place here we got going on here. You know? Everything seems to work together, that's interconnected and interrelated. But it's interesting, right? We got gravity, we've got electromagnetic force, we've got the weak force, the strong force, all this seems to work together. I thought that was pretty interesting. It was interesting to me that ocean temperatures in one part of the world could impact weather patterns in another part of the world. Right? Isn't that true? And I was like, wow, all of this is kind of interconnected and interrelated in ways that we don't understand, but it seems to work. So that's what I was looking at from the natural world. So then I started looking at living creatures. Because I'm trying to find a new way of framing who I am. Because who I am did not serve me well. And what my value in the world is did not serve me well. So I look at the natural world, I'm like, wow, everything's interconnected and interrelated. It's very cool. So I started looking at living beings. And I looked at like an oak tree. An oak tree is this tiny little thing. And in that oak tree has the capacity for the root structure, the branch structure, right? Everything in that tiny little seed. Photosynthesis, and it lands somewhere. And it grows. It has some water, some shade, and that's random, right? They did choose that. And it grows into this tree. And with this power of photosynthesis, it's actually creating oxygen for every other living being on the planet. So I'm like, well, how interesting is that? That this living thing had in its core, in its seed, all this potential that was connected to and interrelated with everything else. So I'm like, I wonder if that applies to me. I wonder if that applies to me. So then I started thinking about it. What did I choose about myself? I didn't choose my skin color. I chose my hair color. I gotta work on that though. My eye color, the fact that I have a twin sister, I have mom, a dad, I was born in Philadelphia. Did you choose any of that about yourself? I didn't choose any of it. But I had these circumstances that I adopt, that I have. And so I realized if I looked at all of that as being interconnected and interrelated with everything else, maybe I could see myself a little differently. I started to think that I was given core gifts and skills that were unique to me, and it was not compared to anybody else. Because everyone has a different setup. How can I compare myself to you when you probably were born someplace else, had a different parent, mother, father, you know, different social and economic class, all these different things. So I can't compare myself to you. But each of us has this core gift and skills that we've been given. Even our circumstances we didn't choose are part of how we, just like the oak tree lands someplace, the oak seed, acorn lands someplace and grows, we all landed someplace and we had what we had, and it transforms us to be the best that we can be. Even the negative and the difficult circumstances, they create who we are. I had a difficult childhood in some ways. I had an alcoholic mom. But is that a horrible thing? It made me who I am. So I'm like, wow, I'm beginning to like this train of thought. How are you feeling about this train of thought? Are you thinking about yourself in a different way? That you have core gifts and skills that you've been given. The circumstances that you find yourself are also given. And that your job in the world is just to fully understand what your core gifts and skills are, to value it, and to fully express it. That has become the way I got off the couch. You know what? I was on the couch for a long time. Because that failure really rocked me. But when I started to see myself in this context, how many of you believe that you have a purpose in this life? Yes. And that everything that you are and everything you've experienced is leading you toward fully expressing and fulfilling that purpose. And so then it becomes, how can I think and act so I actually believe that and see myself and value myself in a more powerful way so that I can fully express all my core gifts and skills that's interconnected and interrelated with everything else and be the, and create the best possibilities for my life and my family. That's what I concluded. So, I did all that really quick, but I wanted to just share that with you. So at the end of the day, you are the subject, and you are part of all of this. As integral a part of it as all the trees out there who create, with photosynthesis, create oxygen for every living being on the planet. You are that integral to all of this. With your core gifts and skills and who you are, all your experiences, if you can focus on that and fully leverage that, that's why you're here. And that you frame your world through your mental models. And the first mental model that you have to reframe is how you see yourself. That's why I wanted to share with you how I started to reframe how I saw myself. Right? The world is in your mind, in that you frame your world through your mental models. Your power comes from valuing and leveraging everything that you are, that you are a masterpiece in the making, and in order to create great possibilities for your life, you have to know and accept yourself. That's the first step in being objective, and objectivity can help you create wonderful new possibilities for your life. So, that is my presentation.
Wow, what a great way to start the day, Elizabeth. Thank you. We do have time for questions. You'll see there are three microphones. Please line up in the aisles. And again, I want to reinforce the no speeches rule. Say it with me, no speeches. Please state your name and where you're from, and we'll try to get to as many as possible. Thanks.
Michelle Chernega, University Park.
Can you speak up?
Hi, Michelle Chernega, University Park. Okay. So if you, now that you learned what you have learned, if you knew that when you had your business and you could have applied it, would it, first question, would it have made a difference? Would you still have your business? And second, you talk about how you lost $1 million. I'm sure I'm not the only curious person in here that would like to know what, if you did know this and you could have applied it, like specifically what happened and that kind of thing.
I would have lost less money. I definitely would have lost less money because I would have believed in myself. I was so passionate about the business. I brought, you know, I don't want to say that it's the first chapter of my book, by the way, but you know, I brought the first consumer product into the United States post-sanctions, when they freed Mandela, right? I raised $1 million, I got into 1,000 stores, launched at the South African Embassy with the White House and State Department, all that stuff, but the supplier in South Africa decided to go in a different direction. So at the end of the day, my distribution agreement was terminated, and the lesson that I learned, why I think it's a real good lesson in objectivity, is that I was too passionate. I was about saving South Africa and didn't develop a good business model. We are so identified with the role that we play in our work, that becomes how we define ourselves, and they called me the fruit juice lady. Now, if they start calling you the job that you had, then you've got a problem. You can't be objective. So I didn't mitigate my risks. I could have had other suppliers, international suppliers, to put into my distribution system that I had created, but I was all about saving South Africa. So I would have lost less. I probably would have still lost the business, or maybe not. I could have either lost less or come up with another product to put into my distribution system.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Lindsay. I'm with Boucher Design and Communications.
Yep.
I wrote down my question. In a situation where gathering the facts to be objective hinges on a person who can't be reached, how do you keep yourself focused and happy in the meantime?
Wait, they can't be reached?
Like to gather the facts to be objective in a situation, and
right,
that person is not calling you back or won't call you back, how do you stay objective?
Well, okay, so the first thing your mind's doing is spinning and spinning and spinning and thinking about all the things that person could say. Is that true?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So can you control any of those circumstances?
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what you have to tell yourself. When your thought's coming, oh my God, what's he gonna say? I don't know, what is he gonna say? What I'm making up is probably not true. Let me just do something differently until I hear from him. Even don't make up stories about why you haven't heard from the person, because we'll make up stories about that too. So just try to, you know, stop the thought when it comes, because you can change and challenge every negative thought. So when a thought comes, oh my God, he's gonna tell me this. No, I don't know that, that's mind reading. That's fortune telling, I have no idea. If he says that, then I'll, you know, whatever. and just try to change those thoughts. Every time the thought comes up, challenge the thought.
Challenge the thought.
Challenge the thought.
I love that you knew it was a he.
Did you say it was?
No, I said they, and you're like, oh, he's
I
not
said
calling
he.
Back.
I,
like,
see,
I don't
I
know
made an assumption.
Knew,
that was my mental model.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Katie with Thomas Jefferson. I think my question's similar. How do you know what is true? I wrote this down as well. How do you know it's true and does it matter? I mean, with the example over there and you said, oh, the person doesn't like me, does that matter? Can you change it? That doesn't have to do with your mental model.
So so you're asking me if what I perceived was true?
Yeah, like what, I mean.
What if she didn't like me?
Right, I mean, that's
okay, so, but how do I, but see, what we can't do is just assume that she doesn't like you. Right? And don't go around acting as if she doesn't like you because she could, and actually it had nothing, she didn't even look at me. It had nothing to do with me. Whatever she was doing had nothing to do with me. So you have to understand that's a possibility, right? So, but if you need to know, you don't say, I don't think you like me. Hey, you know what, I was walking around the other day and I noticed you were looking there kind of pensively. Is everything okay? You ask, try to validate your assumption in a nice way without revealing what the assumption is, but getting the data that you need. Is everything our day, everything okay? Is there anything I can do for you? I hate you. Well, then you know. But then you know. But it's not going to be that. So the question is, figure out a way to validate your assumption before you act on it. So if you think someone's not trying to undermine you, just talk to them. Have a conversation. How are you doing? What do you feel about this new opportunity? Try to get some data before you draw your conclusion. Yes.
Hi, my name is Kelly. I work in a very male-dominated field, and I am usually the only woman ever around. And so I have a fear of being perceived as over-emotional, and I have a concern that it's the self-fulfilling prophecy that the fear of being perceived as emotional is actually driving me to be emotional.
Yeah, because that's how mental models work, absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
So I was wondering if you had any specific advice with that. With
but are you really being overly emotional?
I don't know.
Okay. So you have a fundamental belief that you're overly emotional. So then you got to determine whether that's true. So what are your behaviors that are leading you to that conclusion? Do you cry at a meeting?
Yes, but I cry when I'm angry.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's often perceived as being like scared or sad.
But do you actually know that?
Oh, that's true. I don't know.
You don't, but see, do you see what we do though? We actually, she's not really sure how they're responding to her fear or her emotion. So we got to figure out tools, tips to be able to control the emotion in that moment. Maybe you excuse yourself when you feel that it's coming, right? Because if you want to just get a control over that, excuse yourself before it's coming. Or you can say later, just say, you know, I'm having some issues at home. You know, and everything's going to get resolved really soon. Just so that you're controlling that part of it. But don't project what you think they're thinking about why you're crying.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And rethink why you are that way. And look at the mental models that are driving that. Because there's a mental model that's kind of causing you to respond in that way. So there's some mental model that you might have that's not serving you very well. Okay?
Let's take our two final questions here.
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm from Wallingford. I really, everything you spoke about, thank you so much. It was such a great, fresh perspective. And specifically, the objectivity under pressure, it resonated with me professionally. Mm-hmm. But I also feel that personally, in my personal relationships, especially with my small children, this is a good lesson for me. I was wondering if you could offer us an example of how you've utilized that in your personal life.
Creating the space, the distance in the space.
Yes.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Because you're dealing with irrational people when they're children, right?
Well, yeah. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you just have to just quiet yourself down and just try to listen to that child at the end of the day. But for all parents in the room, because at this age, how old are your children?
2 and 3.
Okay, so even now and even as they grow older, they're starting to integrate their neural network with all these ideas and notions, and you don't have any idea what they are. And so I believe all parents should sit down with their kids once a week or once a month and say, hey, what did you learn today? What new conclusions? I mean, not this language, but what assumptions are you making? What new things have you learned? What new ways of seeing the world? What bothers you? What do you like? Just so you start to understand how they're framing their world. So if they're going off in a deep direction, everybody hates me and wants to kill me, you can stop that. And these days, you know, children can start to feel that way.
Yeah.
But you want to know that early on, and that's why I think parents should have an ongoing conversation.
Thank you.
Is that good? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Thank you. One final question. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Delphia from Penske, and I thought this was great information. One question I have, as leaders and as mentors, how do we help others to change their mental models without allowing our objective awareness to have an impact on what we want them to do?
Yeah, you can't change anyone else's mental model. No, but and why? Why? Because it's what they believe. Right, you can give them new data and a new perspective. You can share with them what your mental models are, how you frame your world, and how you came to those conclusions. Just share that information, and how maybe you tweaked it. You used to think this, and now you think that. And say, hey, but we have the power, encourage them to rethink theirs. But at the end of the day, as leaders, we can't force someone else's mental model. Now, as leaders, when you sitting around a table with your team, you know that you got to know that everyone in that team is thinking differently about everything you're saying. They're framing their world completely differently. So what I would do is go around the room and say, you know, we've got this problem to deal with, and let me tell you what my assumptions are and my concerns are about this. Boom. You tell them. Now I want to go around the room. I want to hear, when you heard this first, what was the first thing that came to your mind? What were some of your assumptions? What are some of your conclusions? And get everyone's conclusions, assumptions on the table. And then as a team, you evaluate, okay, so what are these concerns and these assumptions do we think are going to help us make good decisions? And I think that's what we should all do as leaders, is just understand that we're all seeing it differently. Find out how people are framing their world. Use that data to start problem solving, using those diverse perspectives to problem solve and to make decisions. You with me on that?
Yes,
ma'am. Okay, good. So thank you so much.
So the next session starts at 11:30. Use the time to network, visit the sponsor booths and the exhibit hall. I encourage you to visit the Drexel LeBeau Career Pavilion. We'll see you in the next session at 11:30. And please join me once again in thanking Elizabeth Thornton.